to Ukraine now, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has urged the US to remain open to supplying Kyiv with long-range weapons for its war effort against Russia. In a remote address to the European Union from war-torn Pokrov in eastern Ukraine, Mr. Zelensky also called for more Western sanctions on Russia. Meanwhile, Ukraine's army remains locked in an intense battle to hold back a Russian push. Sean Bell is a military analyst and former Air Vice Marshal in the Royal Air Force in the UK. Sean, welcome back to the program.
Hey, good morning, Sally. How are you?
Very well, thank you. First, can you tell us about the military significance of this area, Pokrovsk, and why Russia is pushing so hard to try and take it at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, if we could get inside President Putin's head, it would be invaluable. But what appears to be the case is that after his initial aim to take the whole of Ukraine, you remember back in 2022, there was that push straight to Kyiv. After that, he seems to now be settling on the four regions in the southeast corner of Ukraine: Luhansk, Donetsk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson. He hasn't got the whole of Donetsk, which is the second one down. And there is a key region in the northwest of that, which he wants to take to complete his objective. The trouble is, Donetsk is one of the key settlements around that. He's set his sights on that. And for the last year, we've been doing commentary about Russian efforts to take it. It's been about a year. Russia is facing over 1,000 casualties a day through October trying to take it. But their grinding progress is gradually taking step by step, is taking part of that settlement.
So there seems like there are a lot of Russian military resources being marshalled to this particular part of Ukraine.
There are, yes, and what Ukraine's had to do is that it's been pretty well documented. I mean, this is a David versus Goliath battle, you know, the Ukrainian David versus the Russian. It's much bigger territory. They've got much more resources, much bigger military. So what Ukraine has had to do is to try to slowly cede territory, but make Russia pay a massive price for every step. And there are reports that they're facing, you know, multi-thousands of Russian forces. Ukraine desperately needs to preserve manpower. There's lots of reports that special forces from Ukraine have been operating in the area. But the one thing that Ukraine can't afford to do is get into a straight slugging match with Ukraine, with Russia, because frankly, the bigger force would win. And that's one of the reasons why you opened this up with a story about those long-range missiles. While Russia is focused on territory, what Ukraine is doing is trying to fight Russia in the rear by bombing its energy infrastructure, which is what pays for the war and make life really difficult for Putin back home in Russia.
Do you think that is a wise strategy?
Well, as a military guy, I think you have to play with what you've got. If you were to take this back a few hundred years where your army met their army on the battlefields, you had a cup of tea and then set at each other, and the biggest, strongest would win. In this particular battle, Ukraine has to play to the areas of its strength. And the one thing it's got is Western technology available to it. It's been very successful at targeting Russian energy infrastructure, but it hasn't got the long-range missiles to go deep into Russia and really make it hurt. One of the reports suggests that, you know, Russian energy situation means that Muscovites are now facing shortages of fuel, that the money that normally comes from selling oil is gradually reducing. Russia is feeling the pinch. The challenge, of course, is that sanctions and these impacts generally take months or years to have effect, and it doesn't look likely that anytime soon Russia's going to run out of steam on the battlefield.
If Ukraine is striking deeper into Russian territory, what does that mean not only in the infrastructure or other targets that are being hit, but for the political stakes for Vladimir Putin at home?
Well, I was out in Ukraine. I try and visit every few months, and I was out there just a few weeks ago in Kyiv and across in Lviv in the west. And what is amazing is the resilience of people and their support now for President Zelensky. About a year ago, it was wavering. But after that dreadful day in the White House, you'll remember when Trump had a go at him, it feels like the whole country has swung round behind President Zelensky. The one thing that is different, though, is that where a year or two ago you got this sense from the people, we're going to win, it's just a matter of time before we kick Russia out. On this most recent visit, they're tiring of it. You know, the flags fluttering at Maidan Square, a flag for every life lost. tens of thousands of these flags fluttering, and it's incredibly moving. And I think the population now, I mean, let's face it, it's getting close to the length of the Second World War, and they just want to see an end to it. But of course, ultimately, the only person who can stop it is President Putin. The West has to decide whether it's going to continue its strategy, which is inevitably leading to Ukraine losing, but losing slowly, or is it going to up the ante and actually try and change the game and force President Putin to the negotiating table?
What sort of tone are we hearing from the European Union right now?
Well, what's fascinating, you know, the other side of the world is that if you wind the clock back a few years, America was the biggest strategic partner of NATO, of Europe. Now it's looking a little bit more shaky. America's looking to focus on China. Therefore, the Europeans are looking at each other going, OK, it's down to us now. What are we going to do? And of course, it's not the United States of Europe. It's a lot of individual countries loosely held together. And of course, not everybody believes the same strategy is in place. If you look at Poland, which is the next country to fall, they're spending a lot of money on defence now. But they are looking to the rest of Europe and saying, look, either we let Russia continue, become emboldened, and then the rest of Europe becomes threatened, or we step up and start to try and bring this war to halt, force Putin's hand, and bring this horrible conflict to an end.
What does the change in the weather mean for this conflict? It's starting to get colder again as we move towards winter.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think in this, it's not just the cold. It's also the fact that, as you're well aware, you know, winter, all the leaves fall off the trees and therefore there's no cover anymore. So a lot of the front line drones have been very active, and troops use the tree lines and bush lines for cover because the drones can't see through those. But of course, as winter falls, all that cover falls. The one difference, though, of course, it becomes a lot colder, windier, wetter, foggier. And there are fewer times in the year where the drones can operate as effectively. Also, it's quite difficult to get your supplies to the front line because the enemy can see virtually everything you do. Generally speaking, the front lines slow down a lot in the winter because it's just a struggle to survive, particularly in the front lines where the temperatures plummet in the middle of winter. At the moment, it's just getting very wet and miserable, but very shortly it'll get very cold. Difficult to dig trench lines, difficult to establish your positions, and inevitably life becomes a focus on survival rather than fighting.
Sean, good to have you back on the program. Thank you again.
Well, you're welcome, Sally.